Today I'm going to discuss D-brains and Landau-Ginzburg models, which are similar to D-brains of type B and Landau-Ginzburg models, which are similar but sort of simpler than corresponding objects on Calabi-Yau manifolds. So we'll see some more explicit examples of the structures I was talking about. But I just last time I just want to make a remark that last time Tony and Greg objected to the statement that I made, claim I made that this graded algebra, the Hochschild cohomology of a Calabi-Yau, the isomorphic as an algebra to the B model, the closed string algebra. So after some discussions behind the scenes, so the consensus seems to be that they are isomorphic, but the isomorphism is not the obvious isomorphism of vector spaces. Actually, that's good, because if that wasn't the case, then the identification of a category of B-brains with a derived category of coherent sheaves on the Calabi-Yau would almost certainly be wrong. So luckily, there seems to be an isomorphism. Isomorphism of algebras. Yeah, but the point is that it should be isomorphic as algebras, and they are. But the isomorphism is not induced by the obvious isomorphism of vector space.
Why is there an obvious isomorphism?
It's not obvious. They're both non-obvious, but one is more obvious than the other.
Oh, okay. Can you give an example?
Sorry? No, we'll discuss Landau-Ginzburg models. They're much, much clearer, because there you can write everything out explicitly and check that they are isomorphic. Well, I mean, well, the example is the example of what? Sort of a proof that they could. Right. The torus is not a good example. The difference is square root of the Todd class. Okay, anyway, so it seems like in this example, just so happens that the closed string algebra is actually the Hochschild cohomology of the category of B-brains. And we'll see today that, I hope, that for Landau-Ginzburg models, the same thing happens. That is, again, the closed string, the algebra of closed string, which is some Frobenius algebra, is actually the Hochschild cohomology of the category of B-brains. I'm not sure why whether it's a coincidence or whether it's some general rule, we'll see that. Well, I guess the Landau-Ginzburg models quite explicitly that even the Frobenius structure can be extracted from the category of B-brains. So I'm not sure. So it shows that one can reconstruct closed string, topological closed strings from open strings in some cases. So let me then move on to Landau-Ginzburg models. So I'll start from scratch. Sorry, that's the problem, basically, because in examples, I can give a plausible definition, right? When the categories comes from some category of modules, a derived category of modules over some algebra, there is a reasonable definition of the Hochschild cohomology of the algebra, basically, right? But, or some version of it, some infinity or whatever. But in general, I don't know, so that's my problem. So just the examples that I know of categories of brains, they all come from categories of modules over some algebra. Of the algebra or infinity algebra that appears. So in general, really? So okay. So you know, the two examples I know, they all come from algebras or sheaves of algebras and modules over them. So there is no issue. So that is more or less standard definition. Okay. So. So now we're going to talk about Landau-Ginzburg models. So I start with the Landau-Ginzburg model is some n equals 2 supersymmetric field theory, which is a deformation of supersymmetric sigma model by some terms which depend on the holomorphic function on our target manifold. And in this lecture, I'm going to restrict to the case when X is just a fine space. although one algebraic models on more general manifolds do arise in applications. So so when I consider, now we want to find some, I want to write down the action for this n equals 2 field theory, but I want to discuss how to find topological boundary conditions for this theory. And the most naive approach is to try the simplest one, that is the Neumann boundary condition. Which means that the normal derivatives of all fields, well, the field phi maps you from Rolchit to the target space X, and the normal derivative at the boundary of the Rolchit should vanish with the Neumann boundary condition. Then supersymmetry, n equals 1 supersymmetry requires also, well, some linear condition on fermions. So they're fermions. Psi plus and psi minus, and the difference should vanish on the boundary. So that's n equals 1 supersymmetric. And when we consider, so now when I consider n equals 2 supersymmetric, consider variation of the action under this, under n equals 2 supersymmetry transformations, then we know that there will be no, the bulk action is going to be invariant because, just because we know that any Lagrangian model is n equals 2 supersymmetric. However, there could be bulk boundary terms coming from integration by parts, and indeed there are some bulk terms. And the variation of the bulk action looks like this. So epsilon bar is going to, well, epsilon bar are going to be Grassmann parameters, which parameterize our supersymmetry variations. So the bulk action is not invariant. Its variation is a boundary term. Of this form. So if the superpotential vanishes, there's no problem. We can impose Neumann boundary conditions. But in general, we have a problem. Neumann boundary conditions break n equals 2 supersymmetry and therefore not topological. So, I meant bar, there's a bar here. No, there's a similar term with epsilon. So this is a Hermitian conjugate. Okay. So, well, for Beresteev variation is obtained by setting epsilon to 0 and keeping maximal bar non-zero. So really, only this term matters. That's why I wrote it down. So that's called the Warner problem, because I think it was first, or maybe one of the first people who found this was Nick Warner. He studies n equals 2 supersymmetric sine Gordon on an interval. Obviously, to maintain supersymmetry, we can either change these boundary conditions. What works as shown by, Nick, I think also, and by Hori, Iqbal, Wafa, and also other people, is that one can, instead of Neumann, impose Dirichlet conditions in some direction so that the endpoint, so that the Rolchit boundary map to some submanifold where the superpotential is constant. So then these terms do not appear. Okay. So, that does work, but it doesn't give the most general boundary condition. And there are other ways to cancel this variation by adding some boundary action. So, and the boundary action which I'm going to take is the standard boundary action, which is obtained by turning on the tachyon and the gauge fields on the brain, which in this case is just the brain wraps the whole affine space X. Okay. So I'm gonna, it turns out that if you just turn on the gauge field, it won't help. That is, there's no way to cancel this just by turning on the gauge field. So one has to have both brains and anti-brains, so one can turn on the tachyon, and the only way to cancel is by means of tachyon and the gauge. So therefore I'll set gauge field to zero. And then the usual a boundary action that is usual means the one which is compatible with n equals 1 supersymmetry for a brain and a breath system is this. Maybe I should write it first in superfield notation, which makes clear that there is n equals 1 supersymmetry. So here, gamma depends on tau and theta, the superfield. And T is the tachyon field, but it's regarded as a function of the boundary superfield. Say, capital phi, I, which itself depends on tau and theta. And the boundary superfield, capital phi, I, well, that contains the map phi and its superpartner psi, which is actually a sum of psi plus and psi minus. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, so this psi I is only a component of Fermi which survived the sum. Well, the difference just vanishes. Okay. So gamma is some superfield, some new degree of freedom which lives on the boundary. So so we have a brain and a brain, and since everything is, well, we're dealing with a fine space, so we can consider all bundles just to be trivial. But if you really want to talk about it, then gamma is a section of a, well, so we have a brain and a brain in two bundles, E0 and E1. And then, so gamma takes values in this bundle. Now, also from now on, to avoid problems with path ordering, I'm going to deal with the case of line bundles. But this can be done for higher rank bundles. We just need to reduce more degrees of freedom on the boundary. It gets more cumbersome, so I won't do that. So for now, E0 and E1 are going to be line bundles. And gamma is some boundary degrees of freedom which takes values in this line bundle. Okay, and it's superfield. So it's a superfield. Well, it's a fermionic superfield. So the lowest component is a fermion, which depends on tau. And then there is a bosonic piece. They both take values in this line bundle. So, well, the tachyon, well, takes values in the dual line bundle. Okay. And T dagger, T bar, takes values in, again, in the same way as this one. So, so the line bundle is all unitary here. So there's some Hermitian structure, which is going to be unimportant later. Now, well, we have a superfield action, so we can, well, this field P, the bosonic field P is auxiliary, so we can integrate it out, and we can write down component action just in terms of eta, the boundary fermion, so this is actually the standard action people use to describe brain and anti-brain systems. And then n equals 1 supersymmetry is automatically maintained. So all we have to check is n equals 2 supersymmetry. That is, we want to actually arrange supersymmetry variations of eta and eta bar so that this bulk, boundary. So this boundary action, its variation precisely cancel that variation there. So there is actually a unique solution to this problem. So eta, again, lives in this line bundle. So variation of eta should have some form like this, where S1 and S2 are some sections of this line bundle. So there's not much choice, just by inspection, it's just consider the general form and try to figure out which line, which what can you take for S. It turns out that the possibilities are tightly constrained. The only possibility to cancel the term is, first of all, to require the tachyon to be sum of two pieces, where F is a section of E0 U1 and G is a section of E1 U0, and where both F and G are holomorphic sections. Okay. And in addition, one has to take this form in order to not to produce some terms which you don't want. You just want to cancel that, not produce some extra problem. So then S1 and S2 are just given in terms of this F and G are just like this. Okay. So then if you compute the variation of this boundary action with this choice of supersymmetry variations for eta, then you find that the variation takes a simple form. So again, for topological symmetry, we really only care about this piece, because we set epsilon to zero. So now I want to cancel that term, and therefore, the only possibility is this. So we must set Fg times Gf to be W times a constant. So. No, this is a metric on E0 and D1, which we just have physically, right? So I'm saying that, yeah. So if F is section of this bundle, then F dagger section of the D1. Yeah, physically, there's always metric, right? So you don't have to write down actions, we need metric. The action involves both T and T dagger, for example. So you need a metric to write down an action. The kinetic term for eta also requires metric. So. Okay. Okay, so that's what happens for line bundles, and actually, some work one can also figure out what happens for higher rank bundles. One can turns out that these conditions first of all, easy to see that this is the only form which doesn't produce unwanted term, and then in order to cancel bulk variation, you need to always impose this condition. Okay. So. It's not so easy, by the way. Well, it depends on the formalism, I guess. So, this computation is done in my paper with my first paper with well, first and second paper with my student Yi Li, and you can look it up there. Okay. Some special cases did appear before this condition, because people who tried to construct linear sigmoidals for D-brains and Kolob-Yau manifolds had to deal with this problem, because in the description, you have hypersurface, some toric variety, you have a superpotential also, which puts in this hypersurface, so if you want to write down some n equals to supersymmetric boundary condition, you have to do some version of that. And there are also papers by Katru, McGreevy, and Hellerman, which do this in special cases. Okay. So now that we understand how to construct supersymmetric boundary conditions, I would like to figure out the spectrum of open strings, topological open strings. That is, the space of morphism, if you wish, in this category of B-brains. So, well, with this supersymmetry variation, it's easy to see that the boundary piece of the Beresteed charge is very simple. Just this. In the commutation relations of eta and eta bar, following from the action, just this, the equal time commutation relations, you can easily see that you generate the right supersymmetry transformations. Now, okay. So it's actually convenient to perform this quantization dictated by these commutation relations and to realize eta, say, matrix like that, the 2x2 matrix, and eta bar, Bay matrix like this. The meaning of this is that, you know, after quantization, we get two valued Chan Payton labels. So one for one brain, one for the brain, one for the anti brain. And then this Q boundary acts on this two dimensional vector space. So these are, this is actually a 2x2 matrix. And in the matrix form is just minus IF. What is? So, well, one can redefine various I's, redefine away various I's. Well, I guess also have an I here. So I want to redefine all these I's if it's possible. So this unfortunate choice of conventions. So I'll write just this boundary piece without these I's or minuses. And then f and g just gonna, the product is gonna be just w without any i's. So that's the boundary piece of the Beresteed part. The part just, they just acts on Chan Payton labels. Yeah, it doesn't square to zero. And you can regard this as a different aspect of the Warner problem. Like if you disregard that the bulk action is not invariant and just compute q squared bulk, you find also that there are boundary terms in q squared. And the same, well, so. Yeah, right. So, right, so, so the bulk supercharge also has some well-known form. And then if you just square it, you'll find some total derivative terms, which bulk square turns out to be, sense of Poisson brackets turns out to be minus integral of omega dx naught. Okay. While Q boundary square is plus I omega. Well, I better keep this I here. Check. So Q boundary squared. Plus I omega, plus I double. Sorry? Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah. So integration by, in complete Poisson bracket is integration by parts. Yeah, there's no time integral, so there's no erasing it. So there's just this. So work in fixed time, so. So when well, you have integration by parts. Right.
Yeah.
Well. Well, but it's, do I not fix time, so you won't get integral, you just get Oh, integral on sigma. Yeah, right, yeah. Right, yeah, that's what happens. So you get W at one end minus W at the other end. Right, right. Right, so when you compute this commutator, you get, well, delta, then you get di, di. Okay. So, okay, so, now that we understand this boundary condition, the Beer-Steele operator, we now can compute the spectrum, well, the cohomology of this operator. So, so one can work, well, so we're going to work in the sort of zero mode approximation, completely adequate for the topological B model. In the zero mode approximation, well, in the absence of superpotential, in the zero mode approximation, one, well, if you just write out the Beer Steele transformation of the fields, I'll just write out the part which is relevant, which is, I said epsilon, render epsilon to zero. Well, actually, you must check that too, by the way, and that ensured by the fact that f and g are holomorphic. Because, well, you will see in a moment that, well, in zero mode approximation, this boundary operator, sorry, the bulk operator just becomes del bar, and then the commutes with this just because f and g are holomorphic. Well, I mean, q boundary is holomorphic expression. So. So we see that the Beer-Steele operator varies the anti-holomorphic pieces of phi I bar, and it also varies psi I, so there's another Beer-Steele invariant. So expressions which are Beer-Steele invariant have structure like this. They're forms, well, the products of several psi I bars which are Beer-Steele invariant. Times some function, locally it's a function of phi. A tensor covariant symmetric in this, and the action of the in zero mode approximation, the action of Q boundary on this observable is simply del bar. Given the action of del bar on this form F you can make from this tensor. So that's the usual story, and but now we also have the, well, that's the usual story. Now, since we're dealing with an open string which begins and ends on some brains, so these Fs are actually sections of, well, not formal forms, they're also sections of the all of these bundles. So if you consider morphism from one direction, sections of this bundle, and sorry, oops, bulk. Yeah. Right. So that's the part which comes from Q bulk. While in Q boundary, well. Our Fs, Fs really describes all, so we have two brains, a brain and anti-brain, which can be in principle of rank, of different ranks, well, of rank higher than one. They must have the same, rank. And then the, in principle, this form F contains strings which, well, with all truncated labels, so as you go from brain to itself and also from this brain. So it's really a 2x2 matrix. So, I mean, there are strict, well, I said incorrectly before that. So, F really belongs to Holmes from E0 plus E1 to E0 plus E1. Not necessarily holomorphic section of this bundle, and then the Q-boundary piece acts just by boundary, well, by the commuting with the boundary piece. So this is some matrix. F is some matrix, and also each element in the matrix is a form. So in the zero-mode approximation, therefore, the space of open strings we'll be dealing with, physical ones still, sort of, we can just restrict to the zero modes, and then our states are going to be described by vectors in this space. The operator in the zero mode approximation is given by the usual piece, which is just del bar of F, and then also the boundary piece, which is the supercommutator of this Q boundary with F. So why does it square to zero? Well, first of all, because Q boundary is a holomorphic expression, we certainly have this. So we really have to check that del bar, well, we know del bar squared to zero, so we need to check that Q boundary squared is zero. And the point is that Q boundary squared is zero when you consider it in the adjoint representation, because sort of the thing which can come, well, compute the square, things like this. By using the Jacobi, that's given by this, and Q boundary squared, although non-zero, is central in this algebra, so we get zero. Now, one can simplify this further using the fact that X is just a fine space. So cohomology of del bar is actually trivial. Okay. So so there's a priori that we have this form with values, well, maybe in homogeneous form with values in this bundle. But really, we can restrict. Well, we can simplify this further because every form, well. We can really work only with zero forms. One doesn't need this whole thing. And the reason is that the cohomology of del bar is actually trivial. So let me show that. So we'll have some form which has, in principle, all degrees. And then the top degree be F, say R. So FR is, so FI is an omega I tensor. The morphism bundle. So this fact implies that since this guy doesn't change the degree of the form, this raises by one. This implies that F R is del bar of some beta, which has degree one less. Yeah. So then let's consider then F minus minus n decrementer of let's define mu F, which is with prime. Like this. So, of course, it's cohomologous in this del bar cohomology to what we started with, but del bar times beta is this FR, so it cancels the top component here. So, F prime, F, well, while this piece has only degree R minus 1, so we decreased the top degree occurring in our form by 1. F prime has only forms at most of degree R minus 1. So we can continue this process until we just left with the zero forms. Okay. And for zero forms, so we just, so now we can assume that F is a zero form. And what does this mean that it's Berry's T closed? Well, so it means that, first of all, it's holomorphic, and second, that it intercommutes, well, it supercommutes with Q-bound.
Are you sure in the line above that the commutator of Q-boundary with F was del bar exact? Why did that imply that F was del bar exact? Just because you're in an affine space.
Yeah, okay. That only works in the affine space.
Okay.
Right. So in general, there's some spectral sequence which computes the cohomology of this operator through cohomology of this and this, but here it just collapses. So what I did just was just explicit argument. Okay. So therefore, you can just work with zero forms, which are holomorphic and supercommute with the Q boundary. So then, from now on, everything becomes very simple. That the space of physical strings, space of physical state, just cohomology of this operator Q boundary, pure algebraic, acting on holomorphic sections of this endomorphism bundle. And since all these bundles are trivial here, they're just matrix valued functions with holomorphic entries. So the matrix with holomorphic entries. So maybe it's, maybe it's worth to spell out. So suppose I have some F, which is, so it's a matrix, and so this block form where so each term here is a holomorphic function, and in principle also a matrix. So if you have R brains and R anti-brains, then the block A is an R by R matrix, which describes strings stretched from the brain to itself, from brains to themselves, and then this block describes strings stretched between anti-brains, and then these two between brains and anti-brains. And, well, it's natural to consider these guys to be odd, because in the Hamilton, as you remember, the way I got the matrices is by realizing operators 8 and eta bar by matrices. So if you write it back in terms of this 8 as an eta bar, you'll see that F is some polynomials and 8 as an eta bars, and A and D, well, so some like this, and then alpha naught and alpha 3 are just some linear combinations of A and D, while alpha 1 and alpha 2 are linear combinations of B and, well, actually they're just B and C. So B and C are odd, while A and D should be considered even. So and when I said, well, the supercommutator, so the action, well, now from now D. So the Berry's T operator acts like this. It maps F to this supercommutator of the Q-boundary with F. And which in more detail is just is this, where note the crucial minus signs here coming from the fact that B and C are odd. Now, we can work out some examples. An interesting example is when, well, the simplest interesting example is given by this. So we have just one-dimensional complex space as a target, and the superpotential is just z to the n. So that's called the minimal model. Of type, I guess, A n. I'll get confused here. A n plus minus 1, maybe 0. Let's see. Yeah, I guess it's right. Okay. Yeah, for n equals to 2 is supposed to get A0. For n equals to 2 is supposed to get A1. So then there are also D and E type minimal models. And actually, well, the reason they're called minimal models is because in the infrared, they're supposed to flow to superconformal field theories. N equals 2 superconformal field theories, which are N equals 2 minimal models, rational superconformal field theories. And also, we'll see that these special potentials have some very special properties from the point of view of category of B brains. And actually, well, later turned out that this problem I'm considering here, sort of factorizing homomorphic functions, products of two matrix polynomials with homomorphic entries, was considered before by people who work on singularity theory, and actually classified all cases when this category of B brains, in our terms, has only finite number of indecomposable objects. And actually, these are precisely the ADE potentials. So for more variables, more complicated potentials, even for sums of minimal models, you'll get lots and lots of brains and probably infinite number of indecomposable objects, and there's no chance of probably classifying all of them. And the minimal models are the only ones where you can write them out. For general potential? I mean, there's a definition, but you cannot hope to classify all factorization, all brains. We're saying that here in this AD cases can just prove that every brain is a direct sum of some finite number of brains. So you can just list those brains and then you're done. But in general, I don't think you can hope to, when there are infinite number of indecomposable objects, I don't think you can hope to write out a sort of complete list. Although maybe it's possible in some cases. It has relevance, well, of course, products of minimal models are related to Gepner models. And you expect that the category of B brains for some Landau-Ginzburg orbifold is actually related to the, maybe equivalent to the derived category of B brains on the quintic. And so, of course, you don't hope that you can list all the objects of the derived category in the quintic, for example. And not surprising. Well, I mean, this is, yeah, so actually, I just didn't define the category. I just defined objects and spaces of morphisms, although composition is pretty obvious. So let me just, well, maybe it makes more explicit. So actually, yeah, so did I define? Okay, maybe I should be more explicit also about morphisms, because, right, so. So let me just remove this for now.
Can you just write down the objects?
Yeah, so let me just be systematic. So now, so brain, which is an object of our category, is going to be some trivial holomorphic vector bundle on Cn, and there are no others, and a pair of maps, which are called F and G, such that F times G equals W times identity plus a constant, maybe. And F, well, G times F plus W plus constant. And then the morphisms are going to be described by, spaces of morphisms described by topological open strings. Say, let me just write first. Well, equivalence would just come from definition of morphisms, right? Equivalence will come when we define morphisms, right? When we know, when we can define morphisms, then when we have an invertible morphism, you say that the two guys are equivalent, right? So the morphisms are going to be like this. So um, Well, let me just write an endomorphism. It's completely, it's sufficiently, I think it's sufficient. It's easier. So we have, well, in principle, maps in all directions. We can just consider this pair of bundles as a Z-mod 2 graded Homomorphic vector bundle. And then morphisms contain all these four arrows, and then arrows which go straight down are kind of even endomorphisms, and then arrows which go across are odd endomorphisms. And these spaces are just spaces of matrices with polynomial entries. So a morphism like this with four arrows is this matrix A, B, C, D with polynomial entries. Describes string stretch between
the
brains.
Same.
Sorry, for now just endomorphism. Morphism from one object to itself. Well, maybe I shouldn't have done this, but okay. So, and then I just want to just restate what I said before about cohomology in terms of this categorical language. It's exactly the same. And now, morphisms, so.
Sorry,
wait a second. So we first start with morphisms which do not satisfy anything, right? But to get, they're not yet physical string state. They do not get spaces of morphisms in the category of brains. So on this space, we have an action of this operator D, which acts, you know. Okay. And then the analog of, analog of going to category of complexes is just saying that phi should be declosed. And then analog of going to the homotopy category is saying that the quotient by Q, well, by D exact endomorphisms. So homology, so morphism, so in this case from an object to itself, it's just cohomology of this D. Okay. Now, if you have two such guys, well, it's kind of obvious what's going to happen. So, well. We just, well, declosedness is going just going to be given again by commutativity of this diagram, basically. So, right. So, and then a quotient by the exact ones. So this defines some category, and as I explained, this, well, the procedure of quotienting by this, well, by D, well, procedure of taking this D cohomology is the same as the procedure of taking Berry's T cohomology. Okay. So now. Yeah, so generally. So these are sort of even endomorphisms, these are odd morphisms. So spaces of morphisms are also some Z2 graded vector spaces. Now, this category was proposed by Maxim Kontsevich, actually. It was proposed a while ago that it's relevant for describing B brains in Landau-Ginzburg models. And the physical interpretation I demonstrated above. So. Right.
Does the differential grade category carry more physical information?
Yes. Right. So I think I'm going to mention this. So in principle, right. So we have this category, the homotopy category. But then if you don't, in principle, carry some infinity products, which do carry some additional physical information. So I hope to show some example of this. So if you just have this category, you can compute, say, three-point function on a disk, as it will show. But you cannot compute four-point function on a disk. You need to have some information about the DG category itself. Okay. Right. 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 So, yeah. So, just in this case, also special sequences just collapse. So, and I showed explicitly how it happens.
No,
Or even on a fine space? On a fine space, I don't think so. But in general, though, you know, you have to work with a full cohomology. I don't think so, actually. But, I don't think so. Yeah, I understand. Well, I wouldn't. I don't think so. But okay, we can. I haven't really thought through this higher point functions. This category only describes the on-shell thing, the three-point function of disk, for example. No, I'm not completely sure. I don't know the argument, although I believe that's true. Okay. Presumably some formality theorem or whatever for C, I'm just going to guarantee that there's nothing bad happening with it. When we're talking about integrate, when you consider, say, four-point function on disk, you're supposed to integrate over the insertion point of the fourth one. We mean the string theory, scattering amplitudes, not the
string.
Yeah, in topological field theory. In topological field theory is not. It was misleading. So we're talking about how to extend the topological string theory.
Right.
Topological field theory, all the information you need is contained in this category, homotopy category. You don't need anything else. Well, not all. Well, you need also some metrics to compute correlators. So we're going to discuss this later. So, well, I was thinking about sort of coupling this topological field theory and topological gravity or something like that. I don't think it should be conformal for that. Well, I'm not sure. I was thinking about just coupling this topological field theory with boundaries to topological gravity in some way. So I'm not sure there's a unique prescription, actually. But that prescription should be part of the definition of the coupling. So maybe there's a natural definition, I'm not sure. Say for minimal, if you just consider closed string sector, right? Van Donkin's model is also not conformal, right? Whenever there is a natural coupling of, say, minimal models to topological gravity. No, it's only integrated over the moduli. I guess, yeah, that's probably equivalent, yeah. Yeah, this part of the story, I don't understand whether it can be, whether there is some unique recipe of coupling it to topological gravity. Correlation functions? You mean talking about primaries or just also including? For the closed or for the open string? For the open string case, we don't really know the answer yet. Well, we're discussing this, but we haven't. Well, possibly. Well, I think there is a unique way, but I was confused by some comments by Wolfgang about just closed string sector for Van-Donkin-Ginsburg models with many fields. Right? Apparently, there's no unique way of coupling topological field theory to topological gravity. So I was confused about when one should expect unique recipe. Okay, so, but I'm going to stay within topological field theory in this lecture. So so now I can work out some example. So let me emphasize again. So this cohomology of D gives us the space of topological, space of open string stretch between one brain and the other. And then they're represented by some matrices. And then according to axioms of topological field theory boundaries, you're supposed to be able to compose these vector spaces. So there's some, that's why we have a category. And then this composition here is just given by multiplication of matrices modulo, again, the exact terms. So we also have the structure of a category. We have the Hirsch boundary OP. So for physics, one also needs some, to compute correlators, one needs also some metrics, topological metrics. I'm going to discuss those later, but for now, let me just talk about the some example where this boundary OP can be computed. So let's look at the A-type minimal model. And here, of course, it's easy to find examples of factorizations. Actually, you might know it's a switch notation. So the simplest factorization is by one matrices. And actually, it turns out that it suffices. There are no other interesting factorization if you just consider a category of B brains. So, well, if one just considers, so you have this phi given by 2x2 matrix with whose entries are polynomial functions, then d phi, as one can easily compute, this. So what's the kernel of D? Well, the kernel of D consists, well, since multiplication by Z to the K doesn't have any kernel, so we must have, first of all, A equals to D. And let me also assume that K is less or equal than N over 2, because the opposite case obtained just by exchanging F and G. So, so then we can solve. Then we can, well, when it's set, we want to set this to zero, so we can solve for C in terms of B. So, okay. So the kernel consists of matrices like this. Okay. And then you, so, and then we quotient by the exact pieces, and then this means that you see that you can shift B by anything, any polynomial times ZK, and you can shift A also by any polynomial times ZK. So therefore, we can identify the homology of D in this case with two copies of this truncated polynomial ring, and this part is even and this part is odd. So these are sort of bosonic states in the open string spectrum. These are fermionic ones. Now, well, this is the algebra of endomorphism. This is an endomorphism. This is the endomorphism of this brain, which is described by this factorization. So this should be an algebra structure, and just given by multiplication of these matrices. So the actually can be described by generators and relations. Clearly, the generators correspond can be written like this. So there is, of course, this identity, and there is some bosonic generator, say, called A, corresponds to a matrix like this. And then there is a fermionic one, which we'll call theta, given by a matrix like this. And then it's easy to see that everything is generated by these guys. So, and then the relation in this algebra, well, obviously we have this. This is the one relation. And theta, of course, commutes with A. We can easily check. And then theta squared is this. Okay. So that's the algebra of endomorphism, which is called the boundary OP in this case. One can easily compute, one can also easily compute how morphism is composed between different brains. It's not straightforward. so let me then, so one, there's some interesting cases which are worth mentioning here. So if I just take n equals to 2, trivial, sort of almost trivial in the Ginzburg model, massive one, and the factorization is just this. And it's interesting that in this massive Landau Ginzburg model, there are actually non-trivial brains, namely this one. Okay. So incidentally, if I take k equal to 0 or k equals to n, I'm going to get a trivial brain. So some factorization which, well, some factorization just give brains whose algebra of endomorphism is just 0. That just means that it's a 0 object in the category. In other words, once you condense the taken, you get nothing. So this is the only non-trivial one, actually, in this case. And the algebra of endomorphism just consists of identity. Well, there's identity, and then there is an odd element satisfying the Clifford algebra relation. So so in this case, the algebra of endomorphism is a Clifford algebra. And actually, it's easy to see that why Clifford algebra appears here. It's actually a feature of any quadratic superpotential. So I have some W, which is given by non-degenerate quadratic form. When one tries to, well, let me then, it's actually convenient to think about this way. So I'll just write this equation Q boundary squared equals W, right? And if I expand Q boundary in powers of ZIs, one can first of all argue that there's no zeroth order term if you want to get non-trivial B-brain. There is not a zero object. So this starts with linear terms. So Q boundary squared being W means that gamma I, gamma j satisfy the relation of the Clifford algebra. So whenever I have a W has a, well, when I have dealing with a massive potential, every brain gives some representation of the Clifford algebra. Well, Zuma to graded representation. And it turns out, well, one can argue just using B model that only the behavior of W in the infinitesimal neighborhood, so the germ of W at the critical point matters. And therefore, actually, if W just has, in other words, this Clifford module, corresponding to a B brain, carries all the information about the B brain. So in particular, if W just has non-degenerate critical points, then one just can associate to every B brain some, a bunch of Clifford modules associated with massive critical points, and that gives actually equivalence of a category of B brains for a massive superpotential with some subcategory of Clifford modules. So another interesting thing. So I'm just saying that you can associate to every brain. So you see the point is that there are no morphisms between brains. So you also have a brain which is sort of localized at one point and another point. They don't talk to each other in the B model. So you can just associate this Clifford. So just can think of it this way, so that every brain can sort of just direct sum of a bunch of Clifford modules. Right? If they n critical points, each of which is non-degenerate, then just take n copies of the representation category of Clifford algebra with the number of generators equal to number of variables, and then the category of B brains is going to be some full subcategory in this direct sum of categories of Clifford modules. So the structure is very simple, in some sense. Okay. Well, not, well, yeah, the category of brains is non-trivial. But there is some, it's in some sense, it's almost trivial, because if you're just dealing with a point, right, the category of brains would be just category of representation, well, finite dimensional vector spaces, basically. Just the semi-simple case, basically. Yeah, I think just because it didn't keep track of the Zmod 2 grading, it just didn't keep track of Zmod 2 grading. The point is that this category, so the point is that if you have even number of variables here, it's just an odd number of variables. So for all even number of variables, you get one category, and for all odd number of variables, you get another one, right? So so say zero variables, just a point, the same as two variables or four variables. So you get basically the category you described, just the Zmod 2 graded version. And then for all odd number of variables, you get a slightly different one. Yeah, so there's some Zmod 2 periodicity. Actually, there's a, let me just mention it right now. So as I said, these categories have been studied by mathematicians, and in particular, the general statement known as this Norrad periodicity, which is also proved by Orlov recently in the context of this Landau-Ginzburg model. They say that you have arbitrary potential, and you add to it an extra two variables, okay, then the category of B-brains are indistinguishable. Okay. So that's almost what one would expect physically. Okay. And now what happens if you had just one square to a potential? Well, then the category does change, but in a rather simple way. So for B brains, we call it, say, B of W prime, B of W, if you add two squares. Okay. If you add one square, you don't get equivalence, but nevertheless, the two categories are very simply related. This has to do, apparently, in string theory with the Orbi folding by minus one to the left, or something like that. So there's by Orbi folding by symmetry, which exchanges brains and anti-brains. So actually, I don't know if it has been proved or not. So maybe there's a proof of that too. But I checked an example, some examples that there is a well-defined Orbi folding procedure which leads from, well, which mimics the effect of adding a square. Okay, and the procedure is the following. So you said it's, the procedure means physically Orbi fold by symmetry which exchanges brains and anti-brains. Okay. And what it means is the following. So what is, well, exchanging brains and anti-brains just means exchanging F and G and also this E0 and E1. Okay, so it's what's called shift of the complex by one position. Of course, shifting it twice gives the same thing in this case because we're working with Zmod 2 graded complexes. The Orbi folded category is the following thing. Its objects are brains where the anti-brain is isomorphic to the original one. Okay. So it's objects of pairs, a brain, and then and an isomorphism from this guy. To its shift. Okay. And what it means in concrete terms, you just suppose, well, in other words, you can also describe it this way. You have this brain and some odd endomorphism beta such that beta squared is 1. Okay. Because, you know, having an isomorphism of a brain and an anti-brain, just having an endomorphism of a brain, well, having an odd endomorphism, which squares to 1. So, well, of course, generic brains don't have such endomorphism whatsoever. The brains which are not their own anti-brains, and then you just sum R, and then you just also need to keep carry along this information about the isomorphism. And I checked in examples, namely, well, this one, essentially. Also for an arbitrary number of squares that adding y squared has the same effect as just orbifolding falling in the original category by this brain-to-brain symmetry. I suspect it's a general fact. Okay. Now, just mention another amusing fact. So if you consider, well, in some sense, if you consider it again this minimal model, then the factorization like this, in some sense, the basic one. Okay. So you can think about other brains sort of as bound state of this one. What is the algebra of endomorphism of this brain? Well, as I've explained, it's generated by the identity and then some odd generator satisfying it's actually zero if n is greater than 2 and minus 1 if n is equal to 2. Okay. So actually for n greater than 2, you don't get the Clifford algebra. You get exterior algebra with one for one-dimensional vector space. This sounds kind of funny, because you sort of lose information about n as soon as n is greater than 2, okay? Well, even though the brain's well. So Maxim Kontsevich actually told me that if you keep track of this A infinity products, then you do remember n. Namely, since we started with some DG category, basically. Well, not quite, but so we started with the DG category. So we can also consider not only get the product structure on the cohomology, we also get this higher massive products. And in particular, if, for example, if set n equals to 3, it turns out that there is a non-trivial massive product for 3 thetas. Okay. And then you can, by homotopy, you can set all higher ones to 0. And more generally, this basic brain has non-trivial A infinity structure on this two-dimensional vector space, okay, given by the some n tuple product, okay, like this. So these are very, very simple A infinity structures. There are no other products. I'm going to derive this. I'm going to derive at least this one next time. I just want to mention that that's why I think this A infinity structure somehow can be used to figure out how to couple these models to topological gravity. And I just want to mention that the structure is here and relatively easy to compute in some examples. And it's kind of funny that, so for n equals to 2, we get Clifford algebra, that is, like this. While for greater n, we get sort of n Clifford algebra, where all products except the nth one vanish, and then we get minus 1 for the nth one. So I'm not sure if, well, there's some general theorem which says that this category of brains, for example, for this model, is actually equivalent to the category of A infinity modules over this A infinity algebra I wrote out here. It's some version of Kochel duality. In this case, though, it doesn't seem to be very helpful because I have no clue how to classify. Well, we have to do this with just two-dimensional algebra. Very simple algebra, it seems. But there are these high products, so I have no idea how to classify A infinity modules over this very simple infinity algebra, so it doesn't really help. So next time I'm going to explain another approach to classifying brains in this model, which was invented by Orlov, which does allow to show that all brains are just direct sums of the ones I wrote out. Sorry, if you just go
back to the printout,
right.
Algebra, well, you can look at
infinity algebra. Yeah, I have this problem. Like, if you have infinity algebra, which is actually an algebra, does it make any difference to consider infinity modules over this algebra? That is, or just, yeah, I have no idea. I ask people who are experts, and they don't know. So in general, yes, but in this, I don't know. Well, in general, it's probably wrong, but in these particular cases, it seems to be. We get the right answer, so I don't know. Well, for n greater than 3, I don't know what the result is anyway, so that's actually how this question came up. I would like to say, to understand whether they're just looking at, one needs to look at, say, A3 modules here or A infinity with higher ones. So. Okay, I don't know. Thank you.